we moved in a couple summers ago, God, it's like 2.5 years ago. And then we met all the neighbors, and we have, I don't even know how, where to begin, but it started actually even before we moved in. We had to move out of our townhouse by a certain date, but the neighbors here in our new neighborhood said, if your home isn't ready yet and you have to move out of your townhouse, you can just move into my house and we'll put all your stuff in the garage and we can move my car into the driveway. We had just met her 5 minutes earlier, and my wife was so taken aback. She said, you know, that's not normal, right? So are you uncomfortable by that? And she said, no, I'm so touched that you would make that offer. You know? But it's, and then she brought us lunch when we were moving in because she didn't think we'd have time to go get lunch. And she made lunch for us. And it's been that way every day since. Jesus land if they live righteously.
It is time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. And at the very top of this, we need to give a shout out to Brandon Merrill, who said, hey, Richie, you should talk to this person being Howard Parr, and get him on the show. Maybe a great discussion. That remains to be seen. I feel like it probably will be, but wanted to give a special shout out to Brandon for saying, hey, thanks for thinking of us. And as always, you can send suggestions to us, tag me or The Cultural Hall on whatever social media. We'll be able to see that, or contact at theculturalhall.com if you just want to send us an email. But we are joined in this episode by Howard Parr. Thanks for being here, sir.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Now, I'm going to presume that you know very little to nothing about The Cultural Hall. Is that a safe assumption?
Very little. I looked it up, read a little bit, and I'm sure there's much more to know that I don't know.
Well, for sure, for sure. But I appreciate that you're willing to be brave and to join us here to be able to talk a little bit about your story. You have written an ebook that is titled, What About the Mormons? Subtitle, mm-hmm. Breaking Through Bias to Find Home in the Most Unexpected Place. So I feel like if I just said, tell me about that, we could wrap this in 60 minutes and that would be the entire thing. But give me a little bit of a setup for what brought you to write that book.
Wow. How far back do you want me to go?
As back as we need to get the context of this story, knowing that I will interrupt you along the way saying, oh, sure. Well, wait, what about that?
I think the thing that really compelled me to write the book, because I had thought about it for a while, I was making notes, and then when I was just no longer unable to avoid it, was experiencing my own personal transition from just the way I lived life and my perspective throughout most of my life. It was pretty consistent. And that changed a lot once I moved here to Utah. So I can talk, if you want to know more about sort of what the background, what I came from.
I would love to. I would love to know where you came from. And then as so many people like to ask, when you moved to Utah, we always ask, why did you move to Utah of all places? Love to know both those.
I get asked that question still daily. So while I'm looking at mountains and skiing, you're like, well, if you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah. And keep it secret. Come on. We don't need
exactly,
everyone to come.
I know.
It's horrible.
I know. This goes against everything that my wife made me promise. You cannot be responsible for any single person moving here. No. As well, I just wrote a book. It might make it, I don't know. but I grew up mostly in Sacramento. In California, but I lived a lot of different places over the years. I went to school in the Bay Area. I went to school in France for a year, and I lived also another time. We moved to Italy, and we traveled around Europe. I lived in New York a couple times. I moved a lot. My closest friend used to joke a lot that, no, it's, you know, the alarm's going off. It's been 4 years. You got to move again. Mm-hmm. And the main thing for me was I'd always, when I was about 20, I went to school in France, and for some reason, immediately I felt very much at home there. I really enjoyed, I didn't speak hardly at all, but it felt, I don't know, it just felt very comfortable being there. I had never felt that before up till that age. And then I came back and I moved to a lot of different places, a lot of cool places around the US. But similarly, I never felt like I just was going to stay somewhere I loved it, it connected with me. And so I did. I moved a lot. I would say, just generally kind of dissatisfied. I was I've changed careers a lot. I've done a lot of different things over the years. Like I said, I had mentioned before, I played drums professionally. I was a paralegal. I was an art teacher. I ran production for a huge project in the world's largest art gallery. I ran that. I ran a construction projects for a huge townhome in New York City, managed my brother's office. I was a photojournalist in the luxury watch industry for almost 10 years. So, yeah, which was really fun. Got to go to a lot of great places, go to watch fairs, boutique openings, go to the factories quite often in Switzerland and Germany, take photos. I worked for a watch magazine, moderated watch forum discussion for a few brands, a couple brands. And so I'd done a lot of things, and but I think I realized, and this would come later, after I moved here, but I think I tended to hit a point where I would say the best way to represent it, I would get visible.
You would get visible.
Visible.
Okay.
Like when a watch company called me an influencer,
Okay.
it scared me.
Too much pressure.
Yeah, and I just didn't want that. I didn't want that spotlight, in the magazines and the events and all that. Time to change careers. I just tended to do that a lot. And I think that was sort of my moving around. I never felt comfortable because I never was comfortable being known, I guess, or visible would be the best way to, I could put it. Like people knowing who I am and what I'm doing and being in the public eye, I would say. Not famous, but just,
Yeah, but known for something. So fame in its idea of, well, we know he does that, but any sort of that kind of thing, you're like, nah, hands off, time to go.
Yeah, it kind of made me panic. So I moved around a lot, and I had come back in 2013 to California from New York, and my wife and I had started a business, and we were actually living on opposite coasts for almost 5 years,
Oh my gosh.
going back and forth. It was supposed to be 6 months, but it just took a while to get things going, and it was really difficult to be apart, and it was really great to see that, well, how much of a life we could create to apart that we could then bring together. Like we'd actually stepped up our marriage during that time.
Sure.
When we got back together, it was like we really had more of each of us there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, far more
And
intentional when you only have few moments, or you're that. I would imagine that you have to be that much more intentional, or use the time that you have because you don't have much time, and be able to overly communicate because any sort of miscommunication can be much bigger because of distance or availability of one another, I think.
yeah. And then in between, she's working at a car dealership and she's getting our business going. And then I was working and running my brother's office in New York City, but then I started moderating the watch forums and getting into that industry and started writing a lot for magazines and doing photography. And then I met another guy and we co-wrote a couple screenplays. So it's like, I'm just going to really make the most of this time. And I got really active, and that was great because when I was back in California and then distanced from the watch industry and nothing really going on, I just emotionally I just wasn't in a good place of like I felt like I don't want to live here. I want to move somewhere else. Or so we started looking around. There was a lot of reasons we had decided we were going to move to somewhere else outside of California, a lot of reasons. And we kind of looked, we did some road trips and we looked at several a number of places, Boise and looked here in Utah and
Sure.
a bunch of places. And I think my wife even applied to jobs in Wyoming. And so the only real dependency was we wanted to be somewhere in the mountains. And we also wanted to be somewhere where she could enjoy her job. She works in the car industry since high school. She wanted to do some work somewhere where she liked. We were going to go to Reno. That job fell through, and she said, "Well, do you mind if I look further. And I was in a band, and I was going to stay in the band and go back and forth to Reno. It's not that far. And I said, well, that's fine. I won't be in the band anymore, but you need to be happy where you're working. She applied during COVID to a job listing in Lehi here in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And like an hour later, they asked, when can you start?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So then you just look at each other and go, Utah,
Good question. We had always come through on our road trips, and usually we would be in Salt Lake area. I've got a cousin who lives in Salt Lake, and we really liked it. And we thought eventually this might be a place we'd want to move. And we really hadn't been to Utah County or some parts of the other state, but mostly just driving through. And we moved, or she got the job in Lehi. And I'll just tell you, to be frank, you know, everybody we knew were in Salt Lake County, and they all told us you won't want to live in Utah County.
Right. It's different. People will say, how different can it be? It's minutes away from each other.
Yeah.
Won't want to live there, especially, not being a person of the faith. You will find yourself to be more comfortable in a more diverse Salt Lake County than you would in a sort of homogeneous Utah County. But you're working in Utah County, so it makes sense. Live where you work.
Yeah. So she came a little bit ahead of me, and she found a townhouse to rent right up from work in Lehi. And she told me within a week, she said, when we look to buy a house, I want to be in Utah County. I like it more. Okay. So when I came, it's about, I think it was less than 2 weeks later, we came to look at a house in Orem, and we bought it. It was actually framed. It wasn't done. But again, we saw the mountains, met some of the neighbors, and said, this seems like a nice place. We've never been here before, but yeah, we'd like to live here. And that's how it all happened. And it was within 20-minute commute, which was what her request was.
Sure.
So we moved about 6 months later into Orem once the house was finished. But I was here every day just answering all the questions. They were very accommodating for how they want outlets and if we wanted extra lights and that sort of thing. And
sure.
It was really helpful.
Yeah, almost like a full-time job when you're doing a build on a house, because if you're not there, it's like, no, we thought you wanted the towel rack on the outside of the brick. And you're like, why would I ever want a towel rack outside on the brick? Why would we do this?
Yeah.
I want to take a break real quick. When we come back, we've landed in Utah. You're into the home. That's where we're going to pick it up in the second block of the Cultural Hall. BestDJInUtah.com. You're right. It's a new ad. What? Well, it's been an entire season since I've recorded a BestDJInUtah.com ad. And well, the wedding season coming to an end at this point, but not really, because what happens now is everyone who's going to get married in 2024 reaches out and says, Richie, is it possible? Do you still have this date? And I tell them, yes, hopefully. And then we get you booked. We'd love to be able to work with you. Travel all along the Intermountain West. Some people call it the Jello Belt. You can go to bestdjinutah.com to request a quote. You can find us on any of the social medias at bestdjinutah. And we can answer any questions. Affordable? Yes. Over 400 five-star reviews? Yes. Highest rated in the state of Utah? Uh-huh. Go on. It's bestdjinutah.com. And I'll give you a little hint. It also helps me to be able to do this, like financially support the Cultural Hall through that. And you get something in return.
Hi friends, Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. Our lifetime service guarantee has become the most trusted warranty in the industry. You can get a brand new PC Laptops desktop computer, and they start at only $29 a month. Check us out at PCLaptops.com.
Here in the second block of the Cultural Hall, before we get back to the episode with Howard, I would remind you to share the Cultural Hall with friends, neighbors, people that you worship with, people that you think might enjoy this particular episode or another episode that you've listened to. Sharing, as your parents taught you when you were younger, is caring. So if you care, please share. Can send the link to the entire run of episodes or just a particular episode. It means a lot to all of us, but specifically to me. So please share the show. So Howard, you the perfect home. It went super quick. You're the GC on this place. It's perfect. You've met some neighbors and you're like, roots, here we go. We're doing this thing. when did you start to realize, hey, this might be a little bit different? Or did you?
Well, yes, but in a very positive way. I think it started right when we committed in that moment. It was a very small project. We said, yes, we're driving back to Lehi and said, did we just do this? I mean, we didn't even think about it. It just felt right. Mm-hmm. So we're doing it, but wow, that's a big decision for never having been in Norham and don't know the community and being warned off moving there.
Like, tell me, was it from when people were like, hey, Utah County, that might not be your jam. Is it because people felt like, well, all you're going to do is be proselyted to? Was it the conservative nature and you find yourself a little bit either moderate or liberal leaning? Or like, what was the warning that you feel like mm-hmm. people were trying to give you?
It generally was about that everybody has their circles. Mm. They're oriented generally around their family or their church, and you won't break into them. People will be friendly, but you won't make friends. Mm. You won't socialize with them. You might feel isolated. That's what was suggested.
Okay.
So, which we've never felt. We found the opposite. So,
spoiler alert. Come on, Howard.
You can edit that out.
I'm teasing. So
turned out to be worse than we thought.
Yeah. You guys look at each other and go, well, I guess we're doing this.
Yeah. So we moved here, and I think a lot of it was the interaction with the trades people who worked on the house, mm-hmm. The building supervisor, the contractor. It was like, wow, I just can't. They're just so accommodating, and they're pleasing. And the I would tell my brother and other friends out of state who are doing remodeling projects, like we would compare notes on experiences, cost, all of that, and they were just like, I need to move to Utah. Yeah. So I don't know if this is everyone's experience, but it was way more reasonable, and it was very personable, and it was just such a good experience to do it. And then we moved in a couple summers ago. God, it's like 2.5 years ago. And then we met all the neighbors. And we have, I don't even know where to begin, but it started actually even before we moved in. We had to move out of our townhouse by a certain date. Mm-hmm. The neighbors here in our new neighborhood said, if your home isn't ready yet and you have to move out of your townhouse, you can just move into my house and we'll put all your stuff in the garage and we can move my car into the driveway. We had just met her 5 minutes earlier.
Wow.
And my wife was so taken aback. She said, that's not normal, right? She said, are you uncomfortable by that? And she said, no, I'm so touched that mm-hmm. you would make that offer, but then she brought us lunch when we were moving in because she didn't think we'd have time to go get lunch. And she made lunch for us. And it's been that way every day since. And I'll tell you more about what happened, but I had a near-death experience this past year.
Oh, my gosh.
Once again, the neighborhood and the community was just so supportive and there for us. And so we get invited to barbecues, and we've gone with our neighbors to the symphony and musical theater and just on drives together. And we've gone to temple openings with them. No one's tried to push us into the faith, but mm-hmm. we've always been invited to be social with everybody.
Now, being from Sacramento, I mean, I know you're from a bajillion places, but saying that, Sactown's kind of the origination, and certainly being other places as well, the church has a presence in all of those places. Prior to moving here, would you say that you knew a lot about the church or very little? Or in retrospect, you realized that you knew very little, but you thought you knew a lot?
Well, a couple reasons I'd known quite a bit. First of all, growing up from earliest age, my parents were close friends with a family that they knew from Michigan. Mm-hmm. And my dad and their dad served on an Air Force base in Sacramento. So we grew up together. They had four kids. We went to their family events a lot. They came to ours. I'm Jewish, so they came to, if we had a bar mitzvah, they came. And so I had a lot of exposure to the LDS church mm-hmm. early on, and had friends who were in the church. But that was the closest. And in fact, now I'm still working with, in my nonprofit, we reconnected, and one of the persons in that family is working with us in my nonprofit.
Wow.
And he lives a mile away from me.
Wow.
So
okay.
We've known each other our whole lives. So I had, I'd say I knew a fair bit about the church and its background, the beliefs. Of course, they share the same biblical, what would you call it, lineage, I guess,
sure.
as Jews do.
Sure.
So I'm obviously familiar with that. But so I think that was, I had that, a lot of that exposure before. I hadn't really spent a lot of time with such a large community of it, where it's impacting tech meetups and events, and not just, you know, within church members, but really throughout the state. I find when I go to events, seminars, our nonprofit is part of a statewide initiative, that there's a prevailing culture. I think that it seems like it's founded in the beliefs of members in the church, though it extends to people who are not in the church, and even people who moved here a year ago.
So when you talk about things like that, is that things like typically we don't do stuff on Mondays in the state of Utah for whatever reason,
or
we always have an abundance of food, more food than we could ever possibly eat at a particular event, or what other things?
Yeah, I definitely grew up with that attitude, approach. I think, well, this was the initial thing that started getting me going on writing the book, was mm-hmm. some of the things I noticed, like, well, just a spirit of giving and generosity, and not just formalized, not just writing a check to an organization, but in terms of the way you speak and listen to your neighbors and the way people are there for each other. Before we moved in, we met one of the neighbors who told us to cancel the moving truck. My brother and I have 5 trucks. We can move you. Mm-hmm. I wasn't used to that. I was used to, oh shoot, I'm going to be out of town, you know, that weekend you're moving. What weekend is that?
Yeah, you know? No, all the weekends. I'm out.
All the weekends.
All of the
I'm
weekends.
Not here.
It doesn't matter.
I won't be here. So it's everywhere. It's this, one of the things I talk about in the book is, how can I be of help to you? That should be the title of every meeting, because it's come up right away in every meeting I've ever had since coming to Utah. Not so where in other places I've lived. Mm-hmm. You don't meet people here. You meet people at maybe a venture capital event or some kind of networking event. They want to know what you're doing. How can I help? Who can I connect you with? They want you to succeed. I've never found that in another environment. I've lived in Seattle. I've lived in the Bay Area, in San Francisco. I've lived in New York. I didn't find it to be that way.
Hmm.
So that sort of thing is so, that's part of it. Also the way people communicate, it's very constructive. It's very generous in the sense that, I give the example of somebody I work with. We were doing a training and someone confirmed that she was able to come, and then wasn't able to show up. And her first thought was, well, I hope she's okay. Let's call her and make sure, or text. That's a generous listening. You know, I think they're not making people wrong or assuming there's something that's, you know, negative, or they're not judging it. It's really just making sure someone's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed these kind of things when I moved here, that people had that in their listening, even at tech conferences where they weren't talking about P&L sheets. They were talking about the good that their company did.
Yeah.
Is doing, and what their mission is, and how they're fulfilling upon it, and how they pass that on to the next generation of tech entrepreneurs. And they're like, this is, it's, to your point, yes, it's very different, but in a way that's so, for me, so rewarding and affirming. And it blows me away. Like, really, every day I'm amazed to see how people are so supportive and openly so and genuinely so of each other on social media forums,
mm-hmm.
and in person. And when I look at just even the forum where we connected, it was like, I've never been on a forum like that. where it's grown so much, and people are just helping each other.
Yeah.
You know, how can I help you? And it's so there's a unique culture here that is very grounded, it seems, in being of service to people on their terms, not just telling them what they need. And I heard that in a statement made. I was at a conference, heard a number of people talk, but when I heard Gail Miller say, you know, that the greatest reward she's ever gotten was being of service to other people. And she said, I don't listen to how I can make a change because I don't want to erase what's good. I just want them to tell me what they need and how I can contribute.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the beginning of turning those gears in my mind that really changed my experience from the way I used to live and the way I saw things to the way I do now in terms of the people I've met and that impact it's had, especially even just making partners with someone, my nonprofit, in a phone call. And we just knew like this is the right connection. And we had a conversation in the first few minutes where she said, I shared with her, I said, I came from a very turbulent family. I'm looking to try and lower the incidence of dating and domestic violence. And here's how I think we can approach doing it upstream and creating a curriculum and all this. And she said, I came from a family that didn't look at things in terms of half empty or half full. My mom just told us, be grateful that you have a glass at all.
Mm.
And I realized, well, I've never felt gratitude.
Mm.
And
some people, when they will hear of your experience and when they come to Utah, here comes the cynic, by the way, just so you know, they'll say, well, Howard, you know, the Mormon people will be nice to you until you tell them that you don't want to join their church, right? Like that people will be very respectful and, oh, can we help you? And we'd love to invite you to a temple open house or a church meeting or whatever. And people will feel like so long as they sort of either do that or don't ever say, I'm not interested, I'm not joining the hard line there, that like people will do it. But at the point that you say, I am Jewish and that is how I will always remain, that sort of severs ties. Has there been any sort of discussion like that? Or have you ever felt like you were in of these individuals' projects?
Oh, no, never. I haven't at all. No. And that's with the opportunity certainly there.
Sure.
For any of us. But like I said, we've been invited. We've gone to temple open houses with the neighbors, with some other friends who've invited us. I've gone to a church service at Christmas because our neighbors were singing in the choir. So we told them, yeah, we'll go. And one of my neighbors has invited me, or she took me a couple times to the Family Research Center, but she warned me ahead of time. She said, you're going to be helped by people who are members of the church. No one's going to try to convert you. Like she's very coddling in that way, you know, making sure that we don't feel, you know, we were invited to a brunch at the church parking lot or breakfast. And someone asked, or someone apologized for them serving bacon, knowing that we were Jewish. And I said, oops, spoilers out. Spoiler alert, I eat bacon.
Yeah.
So I said, that's very, I mean, I only take that as the ultimate in consideration, that someone would actually say that. I mean, I said, no apology necessary. We're just glad to be invited. We've been invited to participate in charitable events, where either toy drives, or if there are refugee families that are settling in the area, we've been asked if we want to help them get settled with kitchen goods and other things, or winter coats. I really appreciate it. I think there's, we've never had that. We have not had anyone draw a line and join the church, or, you know, we're not associating anymore, or we're not friends, or we've had none of that.
Yeah. I have a question around that. So I think that whether you live in Utah or whether you live in maybe one of the more concentrated states, because I don't know that this exists, maybe outside of the Intermountain West, maybe you could go as far west as California, depending on, you know, the community. But like I live in a neighborhood where I would say maybe a third of us are LDS. I'm here in Utah. And like the thing for me, the struggle that I have, the approach that I have not figured out in my particular neighborhood, not really anyway, is if we're doing something like at the church, like coming up this weekend, we're doing like a winter coat drive, right? Mm-hmm. Winter coats aren't particular, you know, Mormon winter coats aren't different than a Jewish winter coat or a Catholic winter coat or whatever. And so, you know, I think that there's probably need within the people that are in my direct neighborhood and also excess with people that are in my neighborhood. And I don't know how, have not quite figured out how to, how to do an invitation that doesn't, and it's probably all in my head, but that doesn't feel like I'm like, hey, we're doing this thing at the church, but it's fine. You don't have to join the church, but it's at the church. It'd be really cool, but we're fine if you don't come. Like knowing and having the experience that you have had and knowing that you're speaking to a majority LDS audience, like how can we invite people in a way that we're just trying to create community, not trying to create a convert? That makes people feel comfortable.
I think exactly what you just said, you know, just that clarity is very, it answers someone's concern if they have one,
mm-hmm.
that this is what I'm being invited to do. And it's specifically this, it's not this. We just wanted to make sure that as a community, you're involved and invited to be in the community in various ways. And you can choose to be or not. I mean, I think, we probably participate more than some of the people on our block in certain things,
mm-hmm.
but you know, that's, and on our street, 11 of the 13 homes, they're members, church members. And then the neighborhood behind us is mostly church members as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was helped having that clarity for us was we, in fact, they asked us, would it be okay if we take your contact information, the church will have it. I met the bishop. We got a visit from some ladies from the church when we first moved in, and they brought us a little nice little gift. We've had missionaries come by and ask if they could share a prayer with us. And I just feel freedom to say yes or no, but I take it as kindness and caring, not necessarily that everybody would feel that way, but
mm-hmm.
maybe it's just, to me, I associate it with everything else in the culture that I live amongst. So when they told us, we have your information, we'll be invited to all the events, to the fundraisers and that sort of thing. And we just put list you as friends of other faith,
mm-hmm.
and we get invited. And some of the things we go to and some of them we don't. And in the meantime, we go to the neighbors to watch a football game, or they come over and have dinner, and I always think about it as friends first,
mm-hmm.
and it reminds me, oddly enough, we lived in Italy. It reminds me very much of the culture there. Like, people treat you like family and you have to fight your way out of it. you'd have to tell them, no, I don't want you to be so nice. I don't want to be involved. You know, just leave me alone. Because they just start there. We got invited to the neighbors for Christmas with all their kids and grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
That's a far cry from what we were told. They'll wave to you, but you won't be in their lives. No, we're going to family events. We get invited to their July 4th barbecue with their family, you know, with the neighbors. And people talk openly about either their thanks for God, or they asked us initially if we minded if we say, they come over for dinner, and do they mind if we say prayers before dinner? And I'm happy to. It reminds me that this isn't, I don't take the food for granted, and I'm thankful for the friendship. But it has a lot to do, I think, with where we're at, just my wife and I.
Mm-hmm.
We really welcome the care and the sociable aspect and just the kindness, and we like to return it wherever we can, and we feed people out of the garden. And I think that's would be my guess. If someone's living there, they know who's in the neighborhood, and it's just, you're making that invitation based on having a relationship that goes as far as they want it to.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a fascinating thing, especially in a post-COVID world, which is a term that I love to say. But this idea of community, and you look in the past about how community was, and, you know, there's some statistic that I can't cite right now, but that people, you know, essentially knew their neighbors back in the day and would know things, you know, oh, that's Jim's house and Jim's wife, Bonnie, and they have four kids and so on and so forth. And now, in a time where, you know, things for a couple of years essentially were shut down in some aspect of it, and then people are busy, over-programmed kids, we can call it all sorts of symptoms of the same thing, but people don't know the community in which they live. And there are, in addition to some really great benefits that we're missing, some like safety and security things that come from being from knowing community. You know, that person shouldn't be at that house. That's not someone who lives there. Who does that child belong to? That pet belong to? There's a natural disaster. Has someone checked on the man or woman who was shut in? There are lots of reasons for community. Why do you think that it is so important to you where you're at in this time of your life to have this community? And this is sort of a religion aside, why is community so important to you?
Well, I think that community, and there's an aspect of religion as well in there, but I think that the community, for me, it was really simple. I just looked at the way that I lived and my experience of life and being dissatisfied most of the time, sometimes depressed, just not unfulfilled, without a purpose. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that I had worked quite hard to disconnect from a lot of people, and I wasn't really looking for connection. I didn't see the value of it always. And then that kind of flipped a bit when I came here, and I talked to some friends of mine too about that. And I decided, just for the sake of, let's see what happens, I'll just go out and go to events and connect with people and see, you know, talk to people on the hiking trail and talk to the neighbors and take cookies over and just see what happens. And I think for all the reasons you said, that community becomes really important, because I think everybody wants to feel like there's a certain sense of security in terms of their own safety, but also reassurance and caring and kindness and all the things they look for in the world come through the deeper connection, I think, with other people. And you can have a lot of great acquaintance conversations, but when it starts getting more personal, and that's another thing I notice here a lot too, people don't often safeguard their personal information. Mm-hmm. I find they'll just tell me the first time I meet them that they have a medical condition or this, and they trust it.
Yeah.
And so I think that level, that what that translates to is, you know, clean streets and safe place to live and kids who can go play out in the street, and somebody left the bike out on the street and no one's taking it. And, you know, everybody's looking out for each other. And I think there's just a tremendous value in that begets a lot of kindness and generosity and a certain standard that you want to give back to the community, because you're getting it. And it's like this dynamic exchange that's always happening, you know.
Yeah,
that's my experience of it.
I want to take another break. When we come back in the third block, there is a question we ask everyone who steps in the Culture Hall. I'll ask that of you. Plus, I want to drill down a little bit more on what this book is really about. We'll come back and do that in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Here in the third block of the Cultural Hall, remember, we're on all the social medias. You can find us at the Cultural Hall. Instagram, we're there. Facebook, also there. X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, there. You can find us on TikTok, on YouTube, all of the places. It's at the Culture Hall, and we would hope that you would find and follow and share and enjoy and delve in and all the things, all the words around it. It's at the Culture Hall wherever you do your social media. Now, Howard, the book is titled "What About the Mormons?" Breaking Through Bias to Find Home in the Most Unexpected Place. Is it a narrative? Are we reading your story and how it is? Is it a, you're thinking of coming to Utah, here's what you need to do? Is it a how-to? What is this book?
Well, it's a very personal story. And I thought the extent to which I can explore and share my own experience and transformation, like I said, from really kind of a darker negative perspective to one of gratitude and generosity and what I picked up and absorbed and live here in Utah, that if I could work through that story and make it clear that this is just an opportunity for someone to examine their own barriers and rigidity and see what it would look like to live beyond them. They won't necessarily probably not live the same story that I did or the same details, but in their own life, they could find some possibilities and doorways open in areas that, well, I liken it to an aperture and a camera. If you're looking through the lens, but you can't see what's around it, that's just all in the dark. And if you open the lens, a lot of doors open. And a lot of times it takes getting past your own bias or stereotypes or expectations. Like, people are a certain way. We have expectations about what the culture would be like. We'd have to go to Salt Lake to go see all the concerts we want to see. Or the food would be X, Y, Z, whatever. With no experience, really. Right. We just had those expectations. And I realized, well, that starts really, you know, closing you off. And you become rigid. You can say no to things before you even know what they're about. So that was the nature of the book. That's been the response that some of the people have read it already. I had a friend told me I read the book, and then I extricated myself from an agreement in a company that was paying me half what I was making before, working twice as much. Now I started another company with my brother, started another company on my own, started giving blood again. I'm helping people by the side of the road. I'd stopped doing that. Like, all of that. And he said, yeah, it made me look at where I had shut down and where I wanted to start it up and be of help and service to people. And so, well, that was the objective of the book, to really share my own experience so that if it was really a deep cut, people could say, well, okay, I get sort of how far I would want to go is relative to the results I could get out of it. And that was the nature of the book. The title was really simple. It's the first question I'm asked every time from someone when I tell them that I moved to Utah. It's the first question that my dad gets asked when he tells them, yeah, my son moved to Utah. And it's immediate. It's always that question. So I thought I would ask that because people in the church would relate to it, but then also other people would say, oh, what's this about? Yeah. They're already asking this question. I moved to Utah. Oh, what about the Mormons? That's always what they ask. And I was like, well, that'll have to be the title. But it's really a story about living beyond your own rigidity in your own place.
So I have a question. At the beginning of this, we chatted a bit about your what my wife always calls when I start to behave that way, being a fussy baby. Kind of I'm trying this and I don't really like this, and I'm trying this and I don't like this, and here's not home and here's not home and there's not home and this isn't. How have those feelings changed for you since you've moved to Utah, personally, faith aside, or maybe faith is a huge part of it, but do you still feel those feelings of unrest, that wanting to do something different, that I don't really belong, all of that? Or has it changed entirely, and how?
That's changed a lot. And it came in gradual steps where I thought, well, okay, I'm not really being of service to anybody else. How could I be? That was sort of beginning. And then understanding, like, I have not experienced gratitude. But after I had that conversation with my partner, Carolyn, about being grateful to have the glass, the next morning I woke up, and it just came to me looking in my house. Like, I have everything I'll ever need. And I felt grateful for, especially just, it's cold outside and I'm warm.
Mm-hmm. And
it was a new experience. And that has evolved into feeling like, okay, well, what's my purpose? What do I really want to do? And so I started a nonprofit, and I found that when I'm in a room and somebody says, well, I've never looked at what I want to do 5 years from now. I've never even considered, I don't even know what values are. And we start going through values and they start, you know, lighting up because they realize their own value, literally their values, and how they can be seen for them and how that will alter their relationships right there in the room. I just started, my experience shifted immensely. It gives me a sense of purpose in being able to be there for people and elevate them versus being unhappy because I'm actually focused so much on me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that experience has really transformed. And what really gave it a shock was almost a year ago, I had a stroke.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it's coming up on a year almost. And the short version is my wife fortunately was home. She had just come home, and suddenly I couldn't talk, couldn't stand, was drooling.
Oh my
arms dropped, and she called the paramedics. I went to the local hospital. They airlifted me to Salt Lake. They told me, you have a clot and we have to get it out or it will be fatal. Okay. And they put me into surgery right away, and they fished a catheter up, and they put a scan above my head. And I heard the doctor say, oh my gosh. He said, what? You don't have any blood on the left side of your brain. It's completely dry. And I said, what does that mean? He said, it means you shouldn't be talking to me. You should probably be dead.
Oh my gosh.
Your brain should not be working right now. And I was awake. And about an hour and a half later, they had removed 5 clots from my brain and kept me on observation and found out I had a heart-related issue and a rhythm issue. And they've since done a lot of procedures this year to help rectify that. But it was such a surreal experience, especially having so many doctors tell me you really shouldn't be alive.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know why you are. But, and I came home and I remember looking around my house then, and everything felt really new. And I looked around at all these things in my view and was in the living room. And I had always thought, kind of like what I was saying before, moving around, like it was temporary. I could get a different couch or upgrade the stereo or change the table or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought of myself as the permanent part of the picture. And after that experience, I realized, no, it's all permanent. I'm temporary.
Yeah.
And I had this moment where I really realized, like I say, I got the memo, you know, life is very short. You don't know when it's going to end. I was very fortunate. I can ski and I can bicycle and I don't have any cognitive difficulties after having 5 clots and no blood on half my brain. And it made my whole perspective shift in terms of realizing like every second could be the last. So just bring it, you know, let people know how you feel about them. Do what you really want to be doing. Live your purpose. I don't do it 24 hours a day. I'm not that good. But it gives me a different home base, as it were. So yes, the experience has really shifted a lot because I realized what I thought there were a whole long list of things I thought was like the grand prize in life, and realized no, if you get to breathe, you got the grand prize. You're here, and it was such a stark message. And it just moved me so much because I realized that, you know, I nearly died, and instead I get to live and with my full capabilities, and that's what you get. You know, you get that time and you don't know how long it'll be.
you know, looking around and you see all the things and you're like, yeah, there's a portion, I think. And I think that they actually kind of break this out into like how old you are, right? That like in your 20s and 30s, you're working so hard to make all the money because you think that things are the things that are going to do it. And then as you start to get a little older, you get this and you've got the, I'm going to say air quotes, blessing of being able to have a paradigm shift, a perspective that has changed and quickly realize that, oh no, these are just things and the relationships are the things that really matter. How, after your stroke, has a relationship with you and your wife changed, or has it?
Well, for the first few months, I think it was very, very hard on her. Afterwards, she was very scared having seen me go through that and was scared it could happen again.
Sure.
And she kept it very stoic. So it wasn't until a few months in where she just came home one day with a migraine and broke down crying. She was really upset. And I think miraculously the message that I got about the urgency and the importance of having that time and just having those moments together, I think she got the same thing without having a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
She was left with that same gratitude and kind of relationship, I think, to the value of that time together and that connection. And she's always been a really upbeat person, and she remains that way. I think she just, we both kind of shrank down also, yeah, to that, what's so important, those relationships, the time we have with people who really make you feel good, yeah, and that you can share that time with, helping people in any way that you can, and or really in the ways that you see as most valuable. So if you feel like you've been given a miracle, then why not live it?
Yeah.
So that's my simple take on the topic. My relationship, my wife is, we've been married almost 26 years, and she's just, I'll start crying if I just think about her. We just have, she knew long ago that life was the reward. I didn't. She knew that long ago. And I luckily, because that's what I think kept us together for so long. And also I knew I couldn't access it, but I knew it was there. And I think that was, she was a mentor for me that way. And her parents were too. And I think that maybe having the stroke allowed me to catch up to her. I think that's much of it. It's interesting because she was talking the other day about wanting to start a podcast, but she said, I don't really have any purpose or hobbies or passions. I always think I should. And I said, yeah, but you're so happy. And she said, I am. I said, well, that's your podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You have all the things that you don't have any of the things that people say you have to have. And yet you're a really happy person. You love life. And I think it's hard to put into words where our relationship has evolved,
mm-hmm,
because I keep reliving the experience and I come out of that with just this kind of connection with her. That's really, it's just powerful. Yeah.
You know, a thing that has permeated our conversation, and I would just echo it again as we kind of get into the closing moments of this, is the fact that I think that we as individuals, we discount ourselves. What do I have to give? I mean, even in the very example of what your wife was saying, what would I have to do a podcast about? And we sort of don't see the things that we have. We look at other people and go, well, that person clearly could do that thing because of that thing that they do or whatever.
Yes.
But, you know, with a belief in a God that created us for a purpose and given the time to be able to fulfill that purpose, like that to me, I think is the value of that community, because sometimes you know exactly what the thing is that you bring and you just want to share it with people. But sometimes it isn't until you surround yourself with a community that you can go, oh, I do this.
Yes.
I am good at that. I had no idea that was the thing. and other people doing similarly, you get to glean those things from them and be able to share in that. And that's why I think it's so vital. So, so very vital. The name of the book is What About the Mormons? Breaking Through Bias to Find Home in the Most Unexpected Place. There will be a link for it in the show notes if people want to check it out, be able to. It's only an ebook, a purchase for ebook. Is that correct?
For the moment, yeah. I want to just gauge interest. And I'm getting a lot of interest. So
that's awesome.
I want to do an audio book. And then hopefully I figured if it starts gathering some momentum, I'll get it into print as well. It seems like a lot of people are interested in reading it. So
that's incredible.
It's a quick read. It's just, it's not too long.
So. How many pages?
Oh, it's 110 or so.
Oh yeah. Quick read. Yeah. Do that in an afternoon with a good sandwich and a nice beverage. You can do that.
And I set up an email address in there too, because I want to hear people's stories about where either the book has impacted them or where they have exceeded their own bias. And I want to share that if they will allow publicly.
Sure. Yeah. You're welcome to mention that here too. And we'll put that in the show notes as well.
Okay. Yeah. It's just mystory@whataboutthemormons.com. That's the email address, and they can write a page long of where they got themselves unstuck and what opened up for them. We want to hear about it.
Do you welcome stories of people feeling stuck, or is it only if they found their way on the other side?
Either way. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Because I know I've met several people who still feel stuck, and I think this can be a great tool for those that are going, hold on, maybe it's the community around you, but also maybe you're a little part of it as well, and being able to find success that way.
Yeah.
Howard, there's a question that we ask everyone who steps into the Cultural Hall. I will ask that of you now, and we ask you that you may interpret it however you might. The question is what is your favorite part of your faith?
The curiosity I have about it. I never land at the end. I'm always still looking to deepen it.
Yeah. I enjoy our time. Again, show notes for all the things that we talked about, including I had the opportunity once upon a time to visit with Gail Miller. And so people can find that link in the show notes and be able to listen to how scared I was, because she's such an amazing woman. And
yes.
You just hear me go, oh man, I'm asking this question right. I hope that you all these things. It turned out really well. She's very, very gracious. But people can find a link for that in the show notes as well. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you will be able to travel home in safety.
In the meantime, Chris at Alpine Lakes Travel, Rick McGee, Debbie Wanless, and Chocolate Cake Bites Podcast will be saving a seat for you
on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.